White Sox Weekly, the official weekly talk show covering all things White Sox baseball.
Get the fireworks ready.
White Sox Weekly on WLS AM 890.
That pitch is swinging a ground ball up the middle. Play for Moncada on the shortstop side. The second throws him out. Hang a star on it. He threw him out for shortstop. He was playing second base. Top of the order now. Here's Zimmer. A slug bump past the mound. Up with it. Moncada flips with the glove. Got him. Back-to-back plays. Getting the gold glove now.
What are we witnessing here tonight?
Solid defense is what we witnessed from Yoan Moncada this season. Well, DJ probably knew that even when he said it. Welcome back to White Sox Weekly here on WLS AM 890. We're starting hour two of our season wrap-up extravaganza. We'll talk with James Fegan of The Athletic in just a couple of minutes. And, of course, to end the show, we've got a season highlight package, all the cool stuff we saw this year. Looking back through some of the highlights, you know, game winners, big strikeouts for young players and all that good stuff. But there were also a couple events at the ballpark that were a lot of fun to watch. Put number 56 up in the rafters this season, and that was a blast. The game was something different, but that afternoon was an absolute blast, and it was a ton of fun to bring it to you here on White Sox Weekly. Technically, it was White Sox Weekly that afternoon. That's what we were doing. So we're doing that, too. 312-591-8900. That's the phone number. You can text as well to that very same number, 312-591-8900. You can tweet us at C1 McKnight. MLB.com at Bat App is your number one mobile app for live baseball, for live White Sox baseball. Stay connected with a fully customizable experience. Get White Sox home screen icons and app features, as well as game day, live game video highlights, radio broadcast, Statcast news, and more. Download MLB.com at Bat today. Now, the reason we came back with a couple of defensive gems from Yoan Moncada is because as much as it's been pretty obvious to witness some of the starting pitching that's been thrown into the White Sox major league system here with Ronaldo Lopez, Lucas Giolito, and even Carson Fulmer of late. As much as it's been fun to, you know, read about and watch Michael Kopech starts, and boy, has it been fun. You know, we're going to talk about a lot of the pitching with James Fegan in just a couple of minutes. We talked a lot about the offense with Dan Hayes. Defense still matters in this game. Run prevention is still absolutely a thing, and it might be even more than normal or more than you remember growing up. Maybe. Yeah, the math says a lot of different stuff. The numbers on what baseball was this last season says a lot of different things. Strikeouts were up again, as high as they could ever be. Home runs were way up there as well. And although the Astros are making it look like all you have to do is swing the club and then you can go ahead and win, maybe march all the way through. Although the Indians are making it look like all it takes is a bunch of strikeout pitchers out of the bullpen and a heavy dose of offense, and you can go ahead and knock anybody out of the playoffs. It does matter to go pick it up and throw it over to first base or get underneath the fly ball or execute things fundamentally. You cannot, and I think this is what we've seen in the playoffs too, and yeah, whether it matters over 162, maybe it doesn't. These trends are kind of weird. But this does. You cannot give the opposing team extra outs. Can't do it. And I think defensively we saw some different stuff from the White Sox this season. I think both catchers, and I want to start there first and foremost, because maybe that catching situation is the one that is, you know, maybe that changes around a little bit. Maybe that's a place where, although Kevin Smith and Omar Narvaez did really well at the plate this year, all things considered, Kevin Smith came on and hit pretty well. 283, 309, 388, used the right side a lot, showed a little bit of pop. Omar Narvaez carried a on-base percentage of 373, and although the average dipped, probably in July, things picked back up, 277, 373, 340. Not a lot of pop there, but if you're getting that from your catchers, that's cool. Defensively, I think those guys solidified themselves. There's probably some work to do there, and I wouldn't be all that surprised if maybe, just maybe, there's a flyer taken there. Maybe it's Gio Gonzalez is throwing in the playoffs for the Nationals. Gio Soto, maybe that's a flyer you take again. But with Moncada, let's talk about infield defense some. With Yoan Moncada, I think you saw how a scouting report on a guy and then maybe the offseason work and the carrot out in front of him of being in the big leagues can really change around a season outlook. There were mistakes to be sure, right? Picking a hop, making sure you're making the distance right, all that stuff at second base, but I think you saw some really good defense there. Tim Anderson's first 4 months defensively were atrocious. There's no other way to put it. And there are many reasons why, right? Obviously, the death of his best friend, the godfather of his daughter, the murder of his was something that he really struggled getting through, and it's completely understandable. When you read stories about how Tim didn't sleep, that's not hyperbole. That's not just, oh, he couldn't. He didn't. And in the last 2 months of the season, defensively, once Tim, to his credit, sought help, talked about it, helped start working through it, slept a little bit. I thought you saw the defense come up quite a bit too. He was natural. You heard Dan Hayes talk about it. He glides to the ball. And while some of the ways he might play defensively are a little unorthodox, he's got the athleticism to make up for that kind of stuff. So if up the middle there, you've got Mankata and Anderson playing toward the defensive end of the spectrum that we saw in the last month or two, that looks a lot different, doesn't it? I don't know where the White Sox are going to go in center field. I would imagine Lurie Garcia gets a crack at it. And while he did improve defensively, he's not Adam Engel. Engel was terrific in center field. Lots of range, plenty of speed, fine arm, needs some work offensively. And we'll get to that a little bit too. But center field's another place where perhaps there's a flyer to be taken. Lurie Garcia, though, definitely showed he's worth handing a bunch of at-bats in 2018 and seeing where you're at. That's a brief kind of overlook. We'll get back to some of the defensive things after the 2:30 news because we've got to call James Fegan here after the break. So we're going to do that. You've got White Sox Weekly. We'll talk pitching. And boy, there's a lot of it here with this White Sox club. We'll talk pitching with James Fegan of The Athletic next on WLS AM 890. Welcome back to White Sox Weekly here on WLS AM 890. I'm Connor McKnight, of course, with us, James Fegan of The Athletic. James, thanks for coming on the show, man.
Thanks for having me.
Any time. Wanted to follow up with you this offseason, now that we can look back with perfect 2020 hindsight on the state of the White Sox pitching staff, all the way from A number one, and we'll get your thoughts into who that might be, all the way down through the minor league system. First of all, with so much turnover, with so much churn, with so many White Sox relievers throwing for the Yankees in the playoffs, what did you think of the job that the White Sox were able to do in moving so many arms this year?
Yeah, as we look back with 2015 vision at this point, I think that they would have to be commended. I think they definitely made more moves than I would have thought feasible, especially at the beginning of the month of July when they still had, you know, really hadn't made any major trades since Chris Sale, Adam Eaton. I didn't think they'd be able to find a market for, you know, Melky as quickly. You know, I probably didn't expect Tommy Canley to go out. I really didn't expect, you know, to create a market for Dan Jennings.
Yeah.
As significant as they did, the fact that they flipped Tyler Clifford in, you know, I think 3 weeks tops, maybe, or I guess he got traded in August, 3 or 4 weeks. Is insane. I mean, it's going to be a player to be named later, cash considerations. It's not going to, you know, be your game one World Series starter in 2022.
Right.
The fact that they got value out of some of the corners that they shook out, I still think is kind of amazing. If you talk to Rick Hahn about it, he shrugs it off and says like, oh yeah, we hit our goals. This is what we expect to do. I think that sounds a little absurd, but yeah, I'm pretty astounded by the level of deals they pulled off. I think not everyone is, perfectly golden. You talk about Tommy Canley and David Robinson. That's probably their most fraught or, you know, a deal where we can't really be sure that it's a home run yet since it's all centered around Blake Rutherford. You would hope in his minor league development, this is probably the low point of Blake Rutherford's career as far as, like, the numbers he put up and, you know, the general consensus of his value at this point. Optimistically, you think he bounces back from this. He gets used to the full season grind and, you know, more of his power shows up. But right now, it's kind of a deal centered around one guy that you're kind of waiting to see him to be the kind of top 30 guy that people thought he was at the start of this year. for the most part, it's, you know, high quality deals, and the volume of them is just staggering.
Right, and that's where I wanted to go here. So if the volume of them is one thing, the quality is obviously another thing. Napoleon always said that quantity has a quality all its own, and I think Rick Hahn would probably agree with that this season. But as to quality, what were your impressions, and how can we be just maybe perhaps a little bit more realistic than overjoyed about some of the White Sox starters who made the big leagues this year? Fun to watch Giolito, a blast to watch Lopez, and seeing Carson Fulmer reclaim some success and birthright to that first-round draft pick was a lot of fun, too. But what's realistic for those three going forward into next year?
You know, beyond thinking about what kind of GM Napoleon would be, you know, you started this year, especially out of spring training, not really wanting to expect too much from Lucas Giolito. Like, he clearly started the season at a point where they were really early in the point of overhauling his mechanics, and we were kind of hoping at the end of the year we would see some prospect shine at all, or some kind of glimmer of hope of, like, being a number three starter down the road. Instead, you saw him come up in the majors and basically be that. I think that's probably the more realistic view of him, despite, you know, the ERA and the low twos, just because of the fact that the strikeout rate is not enormous. You know, he had, like, a BABIP, like, under 200 over his start, so, you know, maybe there's a little bit of helium to it. But he would be the person to tell you that he's no longer, even at 23, relying on raw stuff anymore, that he's more of a pitcher, and he's learned kind of how to have a plan and attack hitters and move eye levels through the course of the start. So he's really gained a lot of maturity in kind of this difficult period of the past maybe year and a half, where, you know, you've seen his velocity tick down a bit. You see him struggle with command. He's really has more of a multiple plans of attack and multiple ways he can get guys out. The success he had clearly shows that his stuff plays to some degree, whether his strikeout rate kind of shakes out and whether or not he shows more ability to get ground balls with some of the new tricks of the two-seam and the sinker and the slider that, you know, he's worked with Don Cooper might move him up to maybe more number two starter, territory. But right now, I think, you know, a really solid number three would probably be, you know, a reasonable expectation for him. That's probably where around I would peg Ronaldo Lopez, though he probably had less consistency than you would absolutely hope for. It's hard to really ding a guy who, you know, had a great season in AAA, got promoted, and, you know, had flashes where his stuff looked dominant in the majors. He's still, you know, only 23, so that you could probably see a lot more start consistency from him this year, or next year, I should say. Right now, I think you're looking at him and you're seeing a lot of the high 90s fastball, you know, occasionally dominant changeup, and seeing a lot of the ingredients that people, you know, tout when they talk about him being an impact starter. But you're also seeing kind of the inconsistency, you know, that people talk about when they think that he'd probably work better in bursts as a reliever. And, you know, he went through kind of a weird kind of strikeout drought where he wasn't commanding his off-speed pitches as well over the last, few starts. But, you know, you could see that maybe become more consistent over the next few years and shake out into another kind of solid mid-rotation starter who has nights where he's, you know, dynamic and flashing all of his pitches and looks like a stud, and have some nights that where he's not commanding as well and living off his fastball. And those are the nights that shake him down to more of a solid number three guy. Fulmer, you know, probably a month ago, I thought, you know, this is, you know, a rough season, maybe give him one more shot in AAA next year to kind of shake things out. And otherwise just, you know, cope with the idea that he might just be a stud reliever, which is, you know, maybe not what you want from the eighth pick, but probably a pretty useful guy long-term. But then he comes and has, you know, three solid starts. He looks electric in San Francisco and Detroit. Obviously, those aren't great teams, but he held his own in Cleveland. I think you go into the season kind of, giving him a shot at the rotation and seeing what he can do and whether he can continue to stabilize throwing his cutter more under Cooper. Kind of where he was this year, I think he'd be happy if he was just kind of like an erratic, huge stuff, you know, back-end starter type of guy. But, you know, there's obviously potential for more when you have that much life on your fastball and that kind of array of pitches that he has. He's kind of seems like found money given the way he was at some points during this year in AAA. So I don't think you'd really sweat if he's a back-end starter at this point. And, you know, maybe he's a guy in the playoffs, like right now, that you're bringing in to rescue another starter and pitching multiple innings. I feel like you can only kind of feel excited that you're going to get something that could stick in the rotation after some of the difficulties we had this year.
How many rookies can the White Sox stomach in a rotation? I ask because pretty obviously they could have a number of them at points in 2018. Lucas Giolito and Reynaldo Lopez and Carson Fulmer we talked about, but it's entirely possible that Michael Kopech forces the issue on them. And Alec Hansen has burst through a couple of levels just this past year too. And while it probably wouldn't be something that had happened until perhaps September, but boy, that's a full five, James.
Yeah, it is. I mean, you'd ideally have Rodon back, who at this point is, an old man with a, Gandalf style beard as far as his seniority with the rotation. You have James Shields, who, everyone loves. It's basically an associate pitching coach, the way like Dylan Covey and people talk about him. You had a veteran staff for much of this year, and it probably produced, one of the weaker years of rotation production that the White Sox, a historically strong pitching team, have had
in
maybe 10 years. So I think you're willing to live with the rookie lumps to kind of see some of the upward potential and stuff that these guys can offer. I'm thinking that the White Sox aren't really going to shy away from that for that reason.
So what is realistic then for a guy like Michael Kopech, who could be the best pitching prospect in baseball once everybody makes their lists come February?
Realistic expectation as far as arrival, I think he could probably push up as early as June if he just, stomps on AAA as easily as he did at AA. At some point down the line, I mean, you have a lot of guys with, Giolito and Lopez and Fulmer and Shields and Rodon and Jordan Stevens and Spencer Adams and Jordan Guerrero and all the guys who are going to be in AAA. But, at some point you expect that, with injury and just underperformance, at some point there's going to be – you're probably not going to wind up worrying about having too much pitching down the road. I feel like we had this conversation with maybe the Mets maybe 2 or 3 years ago. Like, do they have enough room for all these starters? It always winds up being not enough. So I think it's realistic for him to push his way into the majors somewhere between June and August, and there'll probably be room for him to get regular starts. And, I just think, it's always risky to pin your hopes on a pitching prospect, but I just think the world of him. He's got all the stuff you can't teach as far as maintaining, elite life on your fastball, deep into games, having like a wipeout slider, just the kind of the perfect build, ideal build for a starting pitcher. I had to be talked out of putting him above Eloy Jimenez by multiple scouts saying like, what are you doing? He's a pitcher. There's risk, but he's the guy you should be excited for. He's the number one in the system for years to come. I can't reasonably advise White Sox fans to temper their expectations for them. He's the goods.
So how then does Rick Hahn go about building a bullpen in 2018? I guess there's two parts to that question. One is, how does any team build a bullpen, given the fact that they're volatile and they're things that can be used in a lot of different ways? And two, what kind of bullpen should the White Sox build for 2018?
I would say kind of similar to the one that they had this year, except, without, David Robinson and Nate Jones and all the established studs. Obviously, you're expecting Nate Jones back next year. Zach Putnam, probably not so much, probably later in the season. But that kind of gives you your end of the bullpen anchor. That kind of takes some of the stress from shuffling through Juan Manaya and Gregory Infante. Speaking of them, those are two guys who probably earned their spot along with, Aaron Bummer, really pitched well in September. I know him and Jace Fry, they're basically trying to look for to finally develop some in-house lefty specialist after some years of out. But from there, I think you're kind of going the same route as you did this year, where you're kind of looking for minor league free agents like Anthony Swarzak to kind of give shots to and see if they can, show themselves. I think you're going to have some guys like Brian Clark pushing their way up from AAA and kind of just shuffling through and giving opportunities to kind of lower end guys in the system and kind of seeing what they can do. Maybe Jordan Stevens pushes his way up. I know he's a starter right now, but he's probably someone they could introduce in the bullpen if they wanted to near the end of 2018. But I think it's still kind of a clearinghouse for opportunities and giving kind of flyers to guys that you think could, do something with a major league shot.
So let me give you the hypothetical here, and let's say, you know, Carson Fulmer, for whatever reason, is a AAA guy to start this next year. Carlos Rodon's not back either. Obviously, he's going to miss that opening day start at least, and we'll see how much longer he's out. But do you look to find some of those same type of, you know, perhaps sign and trade type guys in the rotation, or can you look to be a little bit more creative? I know the free agent landscape here this year isn't exactly robust, but to use a Rick Hahn word, but are there options for, you know, improving this team down the line?
Yeah, I think you need to grab a veteran free agent starter. I think with Rodon being out, I think with, you know, Kopech not being someone you want to break camp with, you're probably going to want someone to just, you know, the fact that Giolito or Lopez are either could get hurt or, you know, struggle, or you want to like manage their innings a little bit. I think you want a little better insurance. I think there are guys you could try to recruit value of. I wrote about this a little bit this week, you know, Jeremy Hellickson, Tyler Chatwood. You're not looking for like absolute studs, but, you know, someone that, you know, guys who throw cutters, who could use like an out pitch working with Cooper. You know, if Hector Santiago recovers from a shoulder injury, that could be an interesting little reunion. Just, you know, some guys who have some experience being a decent, you know, number four starter in the major leagues that you could give a shot to, could eat innings. You know, as much as, you know, Derek Holland did provide like a trade benefit down the road, he was a guy who ate innings and, you know, took the ball regularly throughout the year so they didn't have to sweat through, you know, some injury issues. They didn't have to worry about the fact that Carlos Rodon, you know, missed the first half of the season. You know, he kind of achieved his goal. He took the ball. He ate innings in a rebuilding season. You're looking for something like that.
What is then your assessment of Carlos Rodon's season? Because, you know, you can look at the six starts he made, you know, from the Cubs start, and then, you know, five after that were interesting, high strikeout, low walk kind of affairs. Obviously, injuries are a big, big conversation when you're talking about him. But as he comes back from a shoulder surgery that could only – it's never good to open up a shoulder, but I guess if you were to get a diagnosis, his is the one you'd want. How would you paint his season for White Sox fans?
On one respect, I would call it kind of a lost year in the sense that you were hoping that you would see a full season from Carlos Rodon pitching like a stud and know, like, this is going to be one of your guys down the road. This is going to be someone that you rely on. This is going to be 280 rock for years to come. You definitely didn't get that clarification with both him starting the year in the injured list and ending with his shoulder getting opened up. In the meantime, though, you still got every bit of evidence that a healthy and, you know, having his delivery synced up Carlos Rodon is a stud. And, you know, he pitched like an ace against top lineups. He went to the Dodger Stadium in the middle of like the height of their run and pitched like eight dynamite innings.
Yeah.
You still know that talent, that unbelievable life on his stuff is there, and you still have to consider him as, you know, maybe might think that Michael Kopech has a slightly higher ceiling. But other than that, he, you know, he every bit as has the potential to be a top-end guy as anyone else you have. So I don't think kick any dirt on the idea that Carlos Rodon could be, you know, a big part of your rotation in 2019-2020. So – you know, you didn't, like, diminish the asset. You didn't, like, you know, lose faith that this could be the guy, but you didn't get any extra certainty that you're looking for out of this year. So it's a mixed bag. But
yeah.
I tempted to call the last season, but not a season that lowered my opinion of Carlos Rodon.
James, appreciate it as always. And I think if we were to sum up the conversation, it would be to say that Napoleon, if he were the general manager of a Major League Baseball team, would never take that team into a land war in Russia in winter.
Unless he was like an AL Central GM.
Yeah, then it's march on. Then
it is, against the wall.
Yeah, then it's just march on. You're absolutely right. Appreciate it, man. Thanks a ton.
All right.
James Fegan, at J.R. Fegan on Twitter, a man who writes for The Athletic and probably doesn't expound on Napoleon there, but could commemorate the Hall of Fame career of White Sox starter. Let me try it again. Got all Napoleon. I don't know, we're right up against news. Our producer, Tyler Bravo, is looking at me like, this is the time you're going to pick to screw up a live read? Good job, Connor. Commemorate the Hall of Fame career of White Sox star outfielder Tim Raines by purchasing a limited edition Tim Raines Hall of Fame dual bobblehead. This unique keepsake includes action shots of Tim's likeness as a White Sox and Expos player. Rock bobbleheads are just $40 each and available while supplies last. Visit whitesox.com/rockbobble to get yours today. You've got White Sox Weekly. News is next. WLS AM 890.
We're back. It's White Sox Weekly on WLS AM 890. Just another half hour of the show to go. This is it, our big two-hour 2017 season wrap-up show. We're on Sundays now. We had a bunch of housekeeping stuff to go over at the start of the show. And we'll go over that again before we get out of here because I don't want you to be without the information about this off-season's schedule of shows. But I can tell you this right now. If you've ever dreamed of being a White Sox player, then right now is your chance to attend the 2018 Chicago White Sox Fantasy Camp at Camelback Ranch, Glendale, January 14th through the 20th. 14th through the 20th, you will be treated like a pro. For more information or to reserve your roster spot, call 623-302-5078 or sign up at whitesox.com. That's 623-302-5078. Or sign up at WhiteSox.com. We just got done talking with James Feegan of The Athletic about the state of the White Sox organization pitching-wise, right? We talked a bit with Dan Hayes of CSN Chicago. I keep on getting that wrong. It's NBC Sports Chicago, I guess. They've changed over. My apologies. We talked about the hitters with him, the position players as they are, as they stand. And one of the things that just stood out to me, really from both of them, and they both picked this up as, you know, kind of separately too. If you go to the MLB Pipeline page, right, MLBpipeline.com, it's where they at MLB rank all the prospects throughout baseball. There are other places that do this too, right? And I don't mean to disparage one against the other. It's just the MLB one is a quick website to punch into the old search bar. BP does a great, Baseball Prospectus does a great ranking of prospects. Baseball America is, J.J. Cooper and his crew over there are terrific. I mean, just terrific. But I just pulled this one up. And I think what stands out to me is that consensus, right? Now that Yoan Moncada has graduated, I mean, you may still see him on some prospect lists, depending on how they term prospect, right? If you still have rookie status, some lists put you on, some lists don't. Same for Giolito and Lopez and Fulmer, even, if you like. But one and two, Eloy Jimenez and Michael Kopech. In the White Sox system. And where they get ranked in the top 100 is, you know, kind of, it'll be interesting to see. It'll be really interesting to see because if there's an elite prospect that made a push this year, that made a real solid, there were a lot. Kyle Tucker had a great season. Victor Robles was amazing. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. in the Blue Jay system was very good. But Michael Kopech tore through hitters. Just ripped them apart. And I think what's really exciting about him in this White Sox system is he has learned to get deeper into games. He has learned to keep his stuff fresher deep into games. And he's learning how to work that changeup, too. It's not just 102-mile-an-hour heat, which is as devastating as it sounds, but it's not just that. So while I'm pretty sure that he'll be in AAA to start the 2018 season, and I can say that with, like, I don't know, probably 90% confidence. Maybe the same chance I gave Yoan Moncada to break camp with the big league club. There was a chance. It was an outside shot. 5% maybe. 3% more likely. I mean, service time is what it is, and a lot of baseball revolves around it right now. There's nothing wrong with that. But from what I've heard, and James said the same thing, and he talks to more scouts than I do. He's on the road a little bit more than I am. That's to be sure, a lot more. But whether it's James, whether it's Ken Rosenthal, whether it's Dan Hayes, me, the praise heaped on Michael Kopech is superlative. It is serious. It's legit. And as much as we've seen pitching get developed in the White Sox system, and as much as I know that you're waiting for bats to come around like Moncada, like Eloy Jimenez, like Nicky Delmonico, like Avi Garcia to continue his run from last year, the potential of this kid is really incredible. So we'll see how these arms balance out and how this, you know, rich, rich system ends up solving itself. Teams have a way of, and ballplayers have a way of doing it. Sometimes it's pretty, you know, sometimes you see that, you know, homemade rotation 1 through 5 all grow up together or at least acquired young and move into the big leagues. Sometimes you see that. Sometimes you see it the way the Mets went. Injuries are injuries. Pitchers are pitchers. And that's a really tough job to do and to stay healthy at this elite level. You know, the Mets had an embarrassment of arms from Matt Harvey all the way down to Steven Matz and Zach Wheeler even. And injuries claimed a lot of those guys. A lot of those guys. And a lot of the future of the Mets in a real way too. What the White Sox have tried to do, and you know, I've said it a number of times, Rakan said it, and that's the guy you should listen to, but is acquiring a depth of it so that you can survive some of that selection process. And with both Eloy Jimenez, that's on the position side, and with Michael Kopech, I can tell you this, they are ranked as top 10 for sure prospects in this by anybody's rankings, because the hype on those guys is as big as hype as maybe I've seen in a while. 312-591-8900 is the phone number. Still a chance for a couple of phone calls when we get back. You can text that very same number too. Going to take a quick break because we put together the 2017 highlight reel, all the moments, the trades, the celebrations, the walk-offs, all that good stuff. That's coming up. Also, we'll reset some of the housekeeping things in case you're just tuning in. Why is White Sox Weekly on Sunday? Is Connor at work on the wrong day? Did he, in fact, just show up and commandeer the airwaves? No. We changed some things. We'll tell you about it when we come back. 312-591-8900. This is White Sox Weekly on WLS AM 890. Welcome back to White Sox Weekly here on WLS AM 890. White Sox games are better with a group. Group events are perfect for clients, employees, celebrating, or fundraising. Bring your group for a great experience with specially priced tickets. It's never too early to start planning 2018. Lord knows the White Sox front office knows it. Boy, the changes this year have been incredible, and a lot of the promise is there, too. It'll be really fun. I'm very much looking for 2018. For more information on the group tickets and whatnot, call 312-674-6330 or visit whitesox.com. That's 312-674-6330. Before we roll on the 2017 highlight package, I just want to a couple of housekeeping things that we led the show off with. And if you're you know, just tuning in now and you're kind of wondering why White Sox Weekly is on Sunday, it's because we moved. We have moved in this offseason. Regular season, I believe, will be back to Saturdays. I think it might happen once spring training rolls around, but we are now, from here on out, during this offseason, Sundays from noon until 1. Looking forward to it. Get a little, you know, I mean, I know it's football season, but you got to get your baseball Jones in, and nobody watches the first half of those games anyway, so tune into White Sox Weekly, get your fix, and then move on with the rest of your Sunday. Very excited about it. Another thing is this. We are going to do, throughout this offseason, a couple of different shows. Some oral history shows. We're going to tell some stories. I'm not going to tell them myself. I'm going to interview people who were there, who knew these, you know, White Sox stories, these White Sox lore, and go back into it, talk about it a little bit. And I wanted your help. So you can tweet me at C1 McKnight. If you've got a White Sox story that you want told here on the show from the people who were involved in it, I'd love to hear from you. I'd hate to miss one that you wanted to hear. We've got some time to do it. We're going to do it. For instance, the one that I'm interested in, the one that I'm going to bring in a couple of weeks, I think, is the story of Orlando Hernandez coming in against the Boston Red Sox with the bases loaded and nobody out in the 05 playoffs. That's been stuck in my brain since I watched it happen live in college, and I just have always wanted to hear from the guys who made that decision, from bringing him in all the way through. We'll hear from Kenny Williams. We'll hear from Don Cooper about that, trying to track down El Duque, too. So that's kind of that's the idea. That's the thread, right? You can take it from there. I want to know what stories you want told because we want to bring them to you here on White Sox Weekly. We also want to remember the 2017 season. It is over and we move on. That's going to be a big focus of our shows in this offseason. But before we leave it, here are some of the highlights of the Chicago White Sox in 2017.
First pitch of the game, a swing and a fly ball deep to left field. This is going to send it to the track at the wall. It's off the top of the wall and gone for a home run. First pitch, 1-0 White Sox.
One ball, no strikes. Frazier waits in the right-handed batter's box. The 1-0 is swinging a high fly ball to left. That's a bomb deep into the seats and straightaway left field. And then he gave a bat toss to let everybody know he got it.
There's Abasiel Garcia. There's a swing and a long one left center field. Tagged, bagged, even at two. That ball was tattooed to left center field.
Garcia's fifth.
Here's a swing and a high fly ball to left. This is going to go for a home run. It's as high as it is far, and it's in the seats. Abreu has hit his ninth, and it's a one-run ball game at 5-4. How about that one?
Oh, that was fun to watch. They call that a majestic home run, folks. Straight up and out. Way to left field. Davidson standing there with a team high, 11 home runs. Still looks like he's waiting for his first grand slam.
But a single, a hit batter, and a walk to load these bases. 3-2 the count. Davidson waits. Asher from the high set deals the 3-2. Swinging a long one to left. Tagged, bagged, slam. Rangers pitch the 2-2 to Martin. A swing and a shot. Quintana Carter throws back the first, double him off. A line drive double play. How's that? A gold glove play by Quintana.
He saved his own life. That's all that was.
Start the countdown from five. Ready? Five.
Four, three, two, one.
Cover's been lifted. Number 56 up on the rafters for everybody here to see at Guaranteed Rate Field. Mark Burley's number has been retired.
And last but not least, you guys, the fans. You guys have been so good to me over my career, and obviously still, even my career's over. And I can't thank you guys enough. You guys have been so good to me. I spent a third of my life here, and nowhere else I'd rather spend it than here on the south side of Chicago. So thank you, everybody on TV, people that are here, people that are not here. I can't thank you guys enough. Thank you.
There's one strike on Abreu. Betances with the bases loaded and the 2-1. A swing and a shot to left field, base hit. We're going to be even. Coming home, Hanson to throw home. He is safe at home plate. Sox win. Sox win as they beat the Yankees 4-3. Abreu is mobbed by the pitching mound. Oh, brother, what a game. This one is swinging a line drive. That's a fair ball down the right field line. That's going to get it ten high and run in. Running around third, coming in. The throw relay home. He dives to the plate. Safe at home plate. Sox win. Sox win. On a double by Melky Cabrera. Inside the chalk down the right field line. They come all the way back and win.
Mayhew at first. And the two-strike pitch. He's out on strikes. That's 10 strikeouts. For Quintana.
Dealing a player as accomplished and high quality as Quintana brought the potential for negative feedback. We are going to remain focused on doing what we feel is best for the long-term healthy organization.
The next one to Frazier, high and deep to left field. This is going to go for a two-run homer. The Sox are within three now as Frazier goes deep. And for Todd, that's his 16.
No ill feelings towards them. We had a great communication, great friendship. Rick Hahn's a great guy. And like I said, I thanked him for, you know, having me as a White Sox. And then, you know, I thanked him as well for getting me over here, too, as well.
I suppose I buried the lead when I failed to mention in this that Yoan Moncada will be in uniform tomorrow. We're not bringing him here to sit. We're bringing him here to continue the development that needs to take place in Chicago. He still has some work to do. He's obviously still very young. But we feel that he's ready for that next challenge that comes at the big league level. I don't suspect any of these players, as they make their debut here in the coming months and years, despite how highly anticipated they may be, there's still going to be an element of development that's going to happen in Chicago.
That pitch is swinging a ground ball up the middle. Play for Moncada on the shortstop side. A second throws him out. Hang a star on it. He threw him out from the shortstop. He was playing second base.
Up the order now. Here's Zimmer. A slug bump past the mound. Up with it. Moncada flips with the glove. Got him.
Back-to-back plays. Getting the gold glove now.
What are we witnessing here tonight?
The 1-2 to Merrifield. That's strike three called. See him. That's what Lopez said to him. See you later.
1-2. Swing and a miss. He struck him out.
Big key for Lucas being successful is having swings and misses on the curveball down. If they lay off of it, it's a little tougher day for him.
That's eight of them right there.
And the 2-2. Swing and a miss. He's got nine strikeouts.
The 2-2 pitch. He struck him out. He struck out the side to Giolito. He's got 10.
Swing a line drive right center field. That's splitting the gap. That's going to go to the fence and right. That's going to get one run in. Yomer around third. He's going to score. Abreu going for three. The throw. He is safe at third base. He's got the cycle. Start it up.
The 1-0. Swinging the ground ball to third. Could be two. Moustakas looks at second. Doesn't get the out there. Throws to first. Run scores. He's got 100 runs. Batted in.
How about that? Thank you, Michael Moustakas.
Two balls and a strike. And the 2-1. Swinging a long one to right field. To the track goes Calhoun at the fence leaps. Two-run homer. Sox win.
on a home run by Delmonico. Here with a 10.
That is how the 2017 season went in a nutshell. Obviously, you know, a season of rebuilding, a franchise-altering season with the trades that were made. But a lot of future was on the field for the White Sox this year, and a lot more could be coming. Looking forward to 2018, just one short winter away. Spring training starts in February. We can't wait, but White Sox Weekly will be here every Sunday to tide you over until we get to spring training. Thanks so much to our guests, James Fegan of The Athletic and Dan Hayes of NBC Sports Chicago. They're both on the show today. If you want to listen to the podcast, in case you missed it, just head over to WLSAM.com/White Sox. You can download all of our podcasts right there and relive all of the glory. We'll be back next Sunday at noon. Thanks so much for listening. White Sox fans, we'll talk to you Sunday here on WLS AM 890.
You've been listening to White Sox Weekly, the official weekly talk show covering all things White Sox baseball. Listen every week for White Sox Weekly on WLS AM 890, the proud home for White Sox baseball.